All right, good afternoon, everyone. This is the January 30th, 2020 session of the Portland City Council. Good afternoon, Carla. Could you please call the roll?
Yes, Fritz.
Here.
Hardesty.
Here.
Udaly.
Here.
Wheeler.
Here. We'll now read the first item, please.
Do you want to do the...
No.
Okay.
Not at all.
Do you want to give an abridged version? Sure.
Yes, let me do a really quick abridged version, please. Welcome to the Portland City Council. The City Council represents all Portlanders and meets to do the city's business. The presiding officer preserves order and decorum during City Council meetings so everyone can feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe. If you are in the audience and would like to show your support for something that is said, please feel free to do a thumbs up. If you want to express you do not support something, please feel free to do a thumbs down. Please remain seated in council chambers unless entering or exiting. If you are filming the proceedings, please do not use bright lights or disrupt the meeting. Disruptive conduct such as shouting or interrupting testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning that will be given that further disruption may result in the person being ejected for the remainder of the meeting. After being ejected, a person who fails to leave the meeting is subject to arrest for trespass. Thank you for helping keep your fellow Portlanders feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe.
Thank you. First item, please.
Item 81, update on the Broadway corridor.
Thank you. The redevelopment of the Broadway corridor represents one of the most significant opportunities to achieve the city's central city 2035 plan and our city's overall strategic goals. Its location and size hold the potential to manage our city's growth and realize our vision for creating shared economic prosperity in the city of Portland. This project will evolve Portland's landscape. These 34 acres could be a new center of employment, housing, a transit and bike hub, and a connector between Old Town, Chinatown, and the Pearl District. I envision the Broadway corridor as Portland's next great place, vibrant, livable, accessible, affordable, sustainable, and inclusive. In other words, a place where all Portlanders see themselves and a place where all Portlanders feel welcome, a place where all Portlanders feel that they have a sense of ownership, in a place from which everyone in this community has the opportunity to benefit. As you'll hear this afternoon, the impact of the development will reach across the city and touch residents from every neighborhood, income level, and cultural community. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank everyone from the steering committee and our development advisor, continuum partners, to the Healthy Communities Coalition and our city bureaus for working with my office, Prosper Portland, and the Portland Housing Bureau to create the vision before you. It's going to take all of us and many more partners to deliver on this vision over the course of the next 20 years. As we go from vision to implementation, we're going to need to make some difficult, important decisions in order to ensure the project can continue to move forward. I'm confident that with this council's leadership, alongside the commitment of our public, private, and community partners, we can build a new neighborhood that reflects our highest aspirations. And while the focus is all about the development, I want to remind people that at the end of the day, it isn't just about buildings or about public spaces or about infrastructure or even our desire to create a world-class example of sustainability. This is ultimately about people. That's what our community is. It is people, and making sure that this development respects all people in this community. And with that, I will turn this over to Kimberly Brannon. From Prosper Portland. Director Branham, good afternoon.
Thank you, Mayor. Good afternoon, Commissioners, Mayor. I'm Kimberly Branham, Executive Director of Prosper Portland, and I'm joined by Shannon Callahan, Director of the Portland Housing Bureau, Vivian Satterfield with the Healthy Communities Coalition, Mark Falcone, CEO of Continuum Partners, and Lisa Abwaf, Development and Investment Director for Prosper Portland. We are excited to be here with you this afternoon at a pivotal moment for the Broadway Corridor project. We have two goals for you today. The first is to provide Council with an overview of the progress that we've made in planning for this transformative development from multiple perspectives. And the second is to understand City Council's key priorities and values as we prepare to bring forward legal agreements with our city, private, and community partners later this spring. There are two things that we're not going to address today. The first is that we are not seeking any predetermination of any master plan approval issues for the USPS master plan site or master plan currently being considered by Design Commission. The second is that we're not planning to dig into the details of project funding or the draft legal agreements with our partners as they are still in flux, and we will be discussing those in more detail next week. Next slide, please. So I'm going to take about 25 minutes to give an overview of the project and process to date. Shannon, Vivian, and Mark will then each share their perspective and priorities with you. And then we'll hear from key partners who have shaped the project, including representatives from our public partners, steering committee members, and the Healthy Communities Coalition. Everyone has agreed to keep their comments focused to ensure that we have enough time at the end to hear your questions and your priorities. So, next slide, please. What do we mean when we say Broadway Corridor? The Broadway Corridor is a 34-acre district in green on this slide that includes the 14-acre USPS site, jointly owned by Prosper Portland and the Portland Housing Bureau, as well as Prosper Portland-owned development opportunities at what we call Block R and the Broadway Bridge site, where Oregon Harbor of Hope is currently located. It also includes Union Station, which is owned by Prosper Portland, as well as Greyhound, the former Greyhound bus terminal, PNCA, and the adjacent future park owned by Portland Parks and Recreation. So this is a district with a lot of development potential in the heart of our city. Next slide. The project's vision statement notes that we have a once-in-a-generation opportunity and speaks to our collective desire to create a uniquely Portland, vibrant, forward-looking, mixed-use, dense urban district that has history and culture, smart growth, and social equity and inclusion at its core. Next slide. From 1964 to 2019, Broadway Corridor was home to the main U.S. Postal Service processing facility for all of Oregon and Southwest Washington. But Broadway Corridor and adjacent blocks have a longer history as a center of commerce and a landing port for new Portlanders. That includes a Chinookian center of commerce and the home to Wapato Valley people, Chinese American rail workers, and a train station that was once envisioned to be the largest rail terminal in the nation. The site of the first performance of jazz in the city at the Golden West Hotel, and a thriving Japantown before Japanese American residents were forced into internment camps during World War II. Next slide. The USPS site provides us with the opportunity to reimagine a central portion of Broadway Corridor into a 21st century center of commerce as a welcoming place for new Portlanders and those whose families and communities have long ties to the district. Connecting the Pearl District and Old Town Chinatown, development of the USPS property could house between 1,800 to 2,400 new households and support between 4 to 8,800 jobs. This reflects nearly 10% of the jobs and residents projected to be added to the central city by 2035. If this growth needed to be absorbed in other locations across our region, it could take 400 acres of land and hundreds of millions of dollars of infrastructure investment to service the same number of people and of jobs and families with greater climate and transportation impacts for our region. Redeveloping the post office site has long been a goal of the City of Portland, going back to at least the 1988 Central City Plan. In the West Quadrant and Central City 2035 plans, the site was identified as perhaps the most significant opportunity within Portland Central City. In October of 2015, as negotiations with the USPS were showing promise, City Council approved the Broadway Corridor Framework Plan, which provided information on the financial viability of acquisition and public investment. To execute on the acquisition and the framework plan, Council authorized up to $40 million line of credit backed by River District TIF income, which includes post office land sales as the first line of repayment, anticipated to be repaid in 21 or 22. At the time, Council action also established some high-level expectations for the site, including that 30% of the residential units would be affordable. In partnership with the Portland Housing Bureau, Prosper Portland then acquired the site in 2016 for an acquisition price of $88 million, which was used for the USPS to relocate to Colwood Industrial Park. Pursuant to the 2015 framework plan, City Council also approved increased height and FAR entitlements on the site, and with those changes, the site can now accommodate 4 million square feet of mixed-use development. Next slide. So as we gained ownership of the site, we set out to approach this project differently than past major development opportunities that Prosper and the city have been involved with. We undertook a racial equity impact assessment where we examined the ways that Prosper had previously engaged in large development agreements and identified ways to interrupt the status quo and bring about more equitable outcomes. As a result, we engaged diverse stakeholders through a steering committee and our community engagement process very early in the project, even before we selected our development partner, and we committed to engaging in a community benefits agreement. The Broadway Corridor Steering Committee was comprised of the 37 individuals you see on the slide, representing a diversity of community, private, and nonprofit organizations, geographies, and lived experiences. From spring of 2017 to summer of 2019, the steering committee advised Prosper Portland and the Portland Housing Bureau on goals for the project, including criteria for and selection of a development partner, priorities for mix of uses, equitable engagement, and community benefits, and the physical configuration of streets, parks, greenery, and sustainable practices. Next slide. Alongside the steering committee process, we sought to engage a diversity of community members in a meaningful way. Over the course of 18 months, we held 5 open houses and hosted 6 pop-up events from Union Station to the Rosewood Initiative. We hosted 4 online forums to solicit input from community members not able to join in person, and we facilitated 10 focus groups in partnership with Lara Media and JLA Public Involvement, with important groups like low-income residents of the Broadway Corridor, individuals with disabilities, faith leaders, and the Japanese American community. Through this engagement, more than 1,000 people provided meaningful input. I'd like to recognize Maya Ariola, June Reyes, and Victoria Lara, and everyone who helped shape this engagement and encouraged robust participation. Through this engagement, we heard specific recommendations like those you see reflected here for affordable housing or active community space. And there's a lot more that you can find out in the community engagement report I think each of your offices have, but this is a robust accounting of what we heard from the community. The steering committee helped us digest the feedback we received and established a set of guiding principles that became our collective North Star. The guiding principles included ensuring that the project fostered accountability, connections, equity, prosperity, resilience, and vibrancy. We deeply appreciate the steering committee for their incredible 2-year commitment of time and expertise to the project, and we look forward to hearing from some of those partners shortly. Next slide. In keeping with these aspirations and values, as the mayor mentioned, we envision Broadway Corridor as Portland's next great place. A place that holds a significant role in the hearts of Portlanders alongside Pioneer Square or Peninsula Park, the Gateway Discovery Park, or the Portland Mercado, and is meaningful to those who call the neighborhood home, their place of employment, or the location to open their first retail shop. As envisioned, this project will foster economic opportunity through quality jobs, small business opportunities from construction through operations. This map shows the site plan with anticipated uses, including prioritizing small business opportunities along the Main Street of Northwest Johnson. The northern end will provide opportunities for anchor employers and a diversity of office and retail uses. The development in total will create approximately 6,000 construction jobs and include commitments to 30% workforce diversity and 20% apprenticeship requirements, as well as the use of at least 20% certified firms. The city's infrastructure work and Prosper's demolition of the USPS facility will align with the city's CBA standards, which are normally reserved for projects over $25 million, and will result in augmented COEP 1% contributions to support business technical assistance and workforce development. I'll also highlight Continuum's willingness to the use of responsible contractors in all commercial buildings for janitorial and security services on site. This designation ensures they provide good wages and benefits, prioritize worker safety, and allow for employees to have a voice on the job. Next slide. The Broadway Corridor site is at the heart of a transportation network that includes light rail, streetcar, and bus, as well as Union Station. Our vision builds on this infrastructure to create a unique, accessible, diverse, and stunning space that increases connections to people across the region. We foresee a new terminus of the North Park blocks with a large gathering area that feels welcoming to all ages and abilities, fosters a space for community interaction, and allows for different activities and needs. We envision a people and pedestrian-friendly public realm with the extension of Northwest Kearney, Park Avenue, and Johnson, which will encourage east-west pedestrian and bike traffic. A similar north-south connection via the green loop that climbs from street grade to the Broadway Lovejoy ramp will meet a goal of 70 to 80% non-single occupancy vehicle trips by 2035. While creating a signature Portland element that connects East Portland and the Broadway Bridge directly with the North Park blocks. Next slide. We've also thought long and hard about the people that will live, work, and play in this place, and how to ensure that it is intentionally and overtly welcoming and accessible to people of different races, ages, household sizes, and incomes. Building on the framework plan, our vision includes a firm commitment to 720 affordable housing units in the site and adjacent to the district's central amenities. We've planned for community space for programming and for public art that will honor and reflect the history of this neighborhood while celebrating and empowering Portland's diverse communities. We've committed to creating opportunities that foster wealth creation for diverse local businesses and to pursuing property investment and ownership structures to increase asset development for communities of color. And in a less visible but equally important way, our approach to development and accountability will model partnership and inclusion. We intend to create an oversight model that supports implementation of this plan and includes community voices alongside developers and contractors through construction and build out of the site. And finally, this project will further the city's climate action and resilience objectives through high environmental standards in project design, construction, and development, starting with a requirement that all new development achieve LEED Gold standards or better. We are working to identify alternative energy strategies that strive for 100% renewables with a long-range climate action target of net zero carbon. And we know transportation demand management from parking, pricing, or transit incentives will be an important complement to the infrastructure investments. With a vision so large, we know that no one entity can bring it to life. Partnership and collaboration have been essential to get us to this point. And it's safe to say an even broader team will be needed to deliver on the plan over the next 20 years. Next slide. We are deeply appreciative of the partners that have walked with us thus far. We want to recognize the enormous investment of time and talent by our city partners from the Portland Housing Bureau, Portland Bureau of Transportation, Portland Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, Bureau of Development Services, Parks and Recreation, Bureau of Environmental Services, Water, and the Office of Management and Finance. From an affordable housing strategy to planning for open space, the green loop, or street designs, to detailed engineering and financing discussions about utility upgrades, construction, or procurement for the city's infrastructure investments, each of these bureaus have contributed creativity and commitment to create a truly citywide shared approach. We also want to acknowledge and appreciate the instrumental role Healthy Communities Coalition has played in setting our path. HCC let us know early on in the process that they intended to negotiate a CBA for this development, so we've been on this journey together for 3 years. They've made a positive difference each step of the way, and we appreciate their partnership and Vivian's leadership throughout. Continuum Partners was selected as our development advisor based on their experience and commitment to triple bottom line development. They have been at and stayed at the table for the past 2 years. Their advice has been invaluable in the process working through issues from truing up costs to design solutions. And we appreciate Mark's leadership and their commitment to finding implementable ways for the private sector to push the envelope for community benefit outcomes. We also appreciate the ingenuity of PGE and Northwest Natural and Bureau of Planning and Sustainability that they've brought to the table to together identify a market-based approach to reducing carbon reliance. and we have been supported by a mighty team of consultants listed here that has presented and spoken to Portland's many neighborhoods, encouraged and digested public feedback, created beautiful renderings, investigated the history, advised us on feasibility, and brought their unique design talents and vision to this project. As we've briefed you and your staff and have talked with the community, we've often used the analogy of trying to land four airplanes at once as we prepare to kick off implementation of this vision. Because we're in active negotiations, meaning we haven't yet fully landed on some key terms, I'll just touch on the scope of each of these agreements, or each of the airplanes. So the first is the master plan, which is currently in review for Design Commission, and why we are not talking about anything having to do with the master plan in detail. And that will establish the infrastructure standards and building envelopes within which development can occur. The second is the disposition and development agreement between Continuum and Prosper Portland, which will focus on the sale of the properties of the northern end of the post office site over the next decade, together with related development, infrastructure, and community benefits agreement. Since the summer of 2019, Prosper, Healthy Communities Coalition, and Continuum have met to negotiate a community benefits agreement that will reflect both public and private commitments. We are currently working on reaching tentative agreement on a term sheet that would speak to construction equity, operations, affordable housing, sustainability, business equity, tenanting, and oversight. And finally, public infrastructure and affordable housing land transfer commitments will be executed via individual intergovernmental agreements. And these agreements will detail funding and finance responsibilities by public and private partners, relevant elements of the community benefits agreements, and delivery expectations. As a true public-private community partnership, the elements of the agreement are closely tied and must align with one another. We cannot accomplish the vision we've set forth today without significant private commitment and capital to execute on those outcomes. We anticipate that our development partners will need to secure about $1 billion in outside capital to deliver on this project over the next 15 to 20 years. Public investment in site acquisition and preparation is about $125 million, which is essentially supported by River District tax increment. Future public and private investment in streets, open space, and utilities will be about $75 million. We're working closely with our Bureau partners to align public infrastructure financing, like system development charges, to public infrastructure priorities, as well as to identify private infrastructure financing mechanisms like local improvement districts. Shannon will speak separately to the capital required to deliver on affordable housing, so that's not included in this chart. The yellow portion that is currently TBD represents those particular community benefits that will require additional investment with tools outside of the city or private sector's conventional means, and will need to be found from either land sales, being invested in these community benefits, or bringing other additional resources to bear. We look forward to engaging with Council further on February 4th at the work session to review agreement negotiations and investment scenarios in further detail and to receive initial direction from Council. So we wanted to close our section today with some specifics around immediate next steps before I hand it over to Shannon. So we'll be back, as I mentioned, to discuss the negotiations in an executive session, and then this spring, Design Commission will hold hearings on the master plan and will bring the key development disposition agreement, community benefits agreement, and intergovernmental agreement term sheets to you for your consideration. We're also moving forward with the interim activation plan, relocating the USPS retail to the adjacent garage, and pursuing demolition of the vacant buildings. So with that, I'd like to hand it over to Shannon to discuss the affordable housing strategy.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. Shannon Callahan of the Portland Housing Bureau. The Portland Housing Bureau is a co-owner of the post office site. As Kimberly mentioned, we invested $14.5 million in tax increment financing to secure approximately 16% of the overall development rights. The affordable housing we create will be for families who make less than 60% of area median income. For a three-person family, that would mean a household who makes less than $47,000 or less per year. That would be housing that's affordable for people like preschool teachers, service workers, or seniors on a fixed income. The Housing Bureau is committed to achieving 720 units of affordable housing within the Broadway corridor. The strategy to achieve this goal is twofold. First, to provide land and Housing Bureau financing to affordable housing owners and developers, and secondly, to use inclusionary housing. Market rate developers within the corridor will be bound to meet their inclusionary housing requirements at 60% of area median income. While the number of units to be created through direct financing and inclusionary housing has flexed over time, our commitment to create 720 units of affordable housing has remained constant. As the post office site and corridor has taken shape with gathering spaces, roads to accommodate bikes and pedestrians and other community amenities, the Housing Bureau has worked closely with Prosper Portland to select parcels to ensure we are able to reach our shared commitment. As we approach the selection of parcels within the district, we were guided by five key values. First and foremost, to reach our goal. We also wanted to be sure that we were providing housing for a range of household types, sizes, and needs. We wanted to maximize connectivity and proximity to site amenities and public spaces. We considered the cost effectiveness of development, and we prioritized the livability and quality of life for those who will make these new developments their home. Guided by these values, we selected an entire city block alongside the new park in the heart of the corridor to create two separate and distinct new developments. This parcel selection also has the benefit of ensuring we can create affordable housing in the first phase of development. In combination, we believe this block will allow for the creation of 440 units of affordable housing. In addition to this block, with input from the Corridor Steering Committee, Prosper Portland and the Housing Bureau have identified two additional parcels for affordable housing development. Prosper has offered to co-develop the NATO Broadway Bridge parcel in a mixed-use development, or alternatively to use a portion of the Prosper-owned site at Block R. Based on current market assumptions and the present plan for development of market rate units in the corridor, we estimate that the Housing Bureau will be contributing just over 30% of the overall financing needed to reach our 720 unit goal, with private capital contributing approximately 70% of the total cost. I'd also like to note that we have a commitment to the history of the neighborhood as well, and would like to ensure that our tenanting, marketing, and services on site are appropriately tailored to reach the Native American, Black, Japanese American, and Chinese American communities. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to Vivian.
Thank you so much. Hi, Mayor, Commissioners.
Afternoon.
It's great to see you all today. My name is Vivian Satterfield. I'm proud to work for Verde, and I'm here today with my colleagues and many members in the audience from the Healthy Communities Coalition. Years ago, we came together as a coalition to work together at the intersection of racial, environmental, and economic justice. The opportunity to apply our analysis to the Broadway corridor redevelopment is in turn an opportunity for a community to hold private developers and the city's redevelopment agency, Prosper Portland, accountable to community-defined outcomes of success. Prosper Portland's presentation, I'm pleased, acknowledges the history of the Broadway corridor, a place in which Portland's communities have been transacted upon as opposed to alongside. From the very beginning, the Broadway corridor is on stolen, unceded land of indigenous and tribal communities. It is a place that was once home to a thriving Black community who were then forcibly displaced across the river. A place that was once home to Chinese and Japanese Americans who were forced into internment camps. The history and memory of our communities is deep in this soil. Myself and other HCC members devoted over 2 years to serving on the Broadway Corridor Steering Committee in order to participate in Prosper's public involvement process as a key stakeholder. And we were buoyed by Prosper's opening commitment to an anti-racist framework. HCC has always been clear about our vision for equitable development on this site. We've also been clear that we know the most proven and effective tool for achieving this vision is through a legally binding community benefits agreement, where the community has real power to effectively enforce the obligations that we win through direct negotiations. And because of that, we believed you, Mayor Wheeler, and you, Director Branham, when you said in an early steering committee meeting that this project would have a CBA. We've been encouraged by the high-caliber advisors that Prosper has brought into this process, national experts on CBAs such as Jamise Myers and Cecilia Estolano. CBAs are proven tools for development that have been applied to projects in communities across the country, both larger and smaller than Portland, including Pittsburgh, Nashville, Atlanta, LA, Oakland, and Seattle. So we're excited that Portland is ready to join these national leaders and Prosper in equitable development by negotiating the first ever comprehensive CBA here. We've been at the negotiation table, as mentioned, for over half a year now. While we're seeing encouraging movement, we've been urged to temper our expectations, to be ready to make compromises. Our communities of color, working families, and those still seeking to secure economic opportunity in the city of Portland will not compromise yet again for someone else's economic interest. We've come too far, invested too much time, and will not easily give up this opportunity to build Portland's newest neighborhood from the strong foundation of racial equity, economic justice, and environmental sustainability. And with that, I want to be clear that Healthy Communities Coalition will not sign an agreement that doesn't deliver on the promise that this project will be racially just. If the city and Prosper are truly for racial equity, we say prove it. Prove it by ensuring the CBA includes equitable access to construction jobs and contracting, opportunities for everyone, including women and people of color. Prove it by offering sufficient resources to create career pathways. Prove it by signing an agreement that offers fair wages, benefits, and a voice on the job for the workers who not only build the buildings, but also for those who work in them later on. We say prove it with meaningful oversight and enforcement tools, including a project labor agreement, which is a tried and true method to meet equity objectives in construction, job quality standards that cover building owners and tenants over the life of the project, and that community organizations are empowered and funded to give project oversight and enforcement over the long term. This is an entire generation of development we're going to see here 20 years, and our communities want and are asking for that oversight. We will not sign away our right to protest this project until we are sure we are getting a just and ironclad agreement for our communities in exchange. And I invite you all to hear directly from HCC members on why they're here with us today in a later panel. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Mark Falcone, and I'm the CEO of Continuum Partners. We were the development firm. Am I saying 6 to 8 inches? I'm trying to see if I'm in that. Okay. We were very fortunate to be invited to sit beside Prosper and all of the community constituent groups over a couple of years ago to really sit to become the planning advisor on this project from a private development standpoint. I've said to many people that are probably here in this room today, and I don't know if I've had the opportunity to say it to all of you, but we were simply drawn to this project because of your aspirations for a very supportive and ambitious community benefits agenda. I'm not going to pretend that we were, you know, wandering around looking for an opportunity to invest in the center city of Portland. I don't think we would be in Portland absent your solicitation for this kind of a venture and this kind of a project. And I have to say that after just short of 2 years of real deep engagement on it, I feel as though our enterprise, our company, and myself personally have been substantially enriched by these conversations, by this dialogue, and by the collective effort that everybody who has been at the table in this project and the wisdom that they've brought to it. I like to say that, you know, we are effectively in the business of human ecology. What we do is basically build and design and conceive of and then administer and manage the human habitat. And I think that what you have set out to accomplish here as a community is to be applauded. I do think that you are exploring issues that other communities haven't found the resources or the courage to step into yet. Now, all that said, our job, obviously, is to also be the financial steward of this project as well. And there's certainly many things that that this project will encompass that will limit some of the capital providers that can come to a project like this. We think that's fine because we do think that some of the capital providers out there are not going to be as well aligned with the long-term community benefits that that the city of Portland and the residents are seeking. I like to say that, our job, what I love about what I do every day is we work on three-dimensional crossword puzzles. Nothing can sort of exist independent of a consequence that impacts many other things. And so as we try to balance for you all of the various demands on this project, our job is to continue to try to meter for you what things will impact the other parts of the project that may be, less negotiable. I mean, the city certainly has expectations for the financial resources that this project will take. If we want to open the piggy bank, which we'd love, by the way, we'd love to do everything on everybody's list, but we will continue to be a strong advisor and a strong advocate to help you understand what the various implications are and how one implication creates an unintended consequence in another. But sometimes we find great pattern-solving solutions along the way, too, where we are able to bring together many things that that independently and collectively help to fulfill the broader community's objectives. So I'd like to just end by thanking Council, the mayor, for terrific leadership. I think that the folks at Prosper have been a phenomenal thought partner along the way. And I really have enjoyed the opportunity to get to know so many members of your community through the steering committee and through the HCC interactions. So thank you for the opportunity to be here, and we look forward to being able to not only get this project built, but then learn from it together over the next 20 years.
Thank you, Mark. We appreciate it. Thank you, all of you.
And, can we ask questions?
Sure. Yeah, why don't we do that before each panel disperses? Commissioner Hardis, to you first.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you all for a very detailed presentation. I want to applaud Prosper Portland for leading with Prosper Portland and the Housing Bureau for leading with housing that people can afford to live in. Because we've had big development projects that have promised housing people could afford to live in the past. And then, oops, we just never got around to building that housing. So I am greatly appreciative that we're leading with housing that people can afford to live in. And 30% of the area median income is a very good place for us to be. So. It breaks your heart when you think $47,000 doesn't actually buy much in the city of Portland today. So thank you both for that. I also want to remind Kimberly that when we first started talking about this project, I was very concerned that we hired an out-of-town advisor, and your response was, hold me accountable, because there will be opportunities for local contractors to make money off of this generational project. I don't see it yet. Where is it?
So we are in the process of negotiating. Lisa, can you bring up the slide that shows the site? So we are in the process of negotiating with Continuum for the northern end of the district, so largely commercial. You can see it here in yellow on the map. We would anticipate that Continuum will have a number of partners. They will select a general contractor. There are requirements that 22% of the firms be certified that are working on the construction. We've also have a element in the term sheet. It hasn't been ratified yet, but an element in the term sheet that talks about ways to look at innovative investment models. So the Mercy Corps Community Investment Trust is one that we've looked at. But I think we are still very early in the negotiation process. We do anticipate, as soon as we are able to put out the southern portion, which is largely residential, we would anticipate that there will be, in addition to local affordable housing developers, that there will be other developers who will come in. Continuum has not expressed an interest in the southern part of it, and so I think you're going to see a mixture.
Just know that I'm going to continue to ask that question every time you come to me with this project, okay? Because we have made a commitment that I want to make sure that we live up to. So the 22% certified firms is fine, but as you know, many small minority-owned and women-owned firms do not go through the process of state certification because it is meaningless for them, and it only helps white majority contractors. What other avenue are we going to use to engage small minority and women-owned firms who are very qualified to do the work, but they don't go through the certification because that's not something that helps them?
Well, I think we have a number of technical assistance providers who, while they're working to either increase awareness about projects, will encourage companies to be certified. And we have specifically called for, and on the term sheet there would is a requirement currently, that within the 22%, that 12% are MBE certified, MBE or DBE certified. So it can't be all ESBs and meet our goals. There's another requirement that, and this is in line with the city's community benefits agreement policy, that that there's a 5% goal for WBE or WDBE firms.
And for folks who are wondering what the heck we're talking about, we're talking women-owned businesses, minority-owned businesses, and emerging small businesses. We get into that alphabet soup and people go, what the heck are they talking about? Again, I mean, this is a generational project, and the decisions that we make today will carry out over the next 20 years of development, right? And I am very concerned that we start off very strong and very centered on those communities who, you know, over and over again gets lots of promises but never get the benefit of the development that takes place. And so what's been your experience at Continuum for really engaging contractors of color, whether or not they have state certification, and what's been your success rate in that effort?
Well, we actually have a platform, which is not a conventional real estate development platform, at the Denver International Airport, where we own and facilitated 40 retail kiosks that are in the center concourse. And the idea was that it was a program to really encourage and help cultivate small business enterprises that could eventually, you know, get established and eventually perhaps grow into permanent inline tenants at the airport. And we started out when we started that program, and the alphabet soup, and that one is ACDBWBE.
Oh, that's even worse than ours. Oh, my gosh.
And we started out with a 22% goal, and it was 22% not just participation, but sales. And we were able to outperform that in our first seven-year term pretty significantly. We, in our renewal with the city of Denver and the airport authority, we increased that to 40%. And right now, I just saw the report yesterday, we're at 50%. And we've now graduated several small businesses into permanent operations. Now, believe me, there's plenty that haven't been able to make it, but we have visual merchandise experts that help them. We help them curate their product and their offering. We help them with hiring. We help them with inventory management. We provide a tremendous amount of support and capacity building in that process.
Thank you very much for that. That gives me a little less anxiety knowing that you've actually had that experience, so I appreciate that. Ms. Sutterfield, thank you so much for being here. I want to talk to you about the Healthy Communities Coalition I know that that you've been working a long time as part of the coalition with Prosper and Continuum around community benefit agreements and just some setting some guidelines about how this development process will happen. And I wanted to talk to you about whether or not there will be an oversight committee that will meet monthly to determine whether the goals are clearly being met, and if they're not being met, how do we change it so that we are meeting our goals, right? So some projects, we wait till the end and then we evaluate and we scratch our head and wonder why we didn't reach our goal. Some projects, we actually put groups together that meet monthly and they check the numbers and they make corrections where they need to. Where does this project fit?
Commissioner Hardesty, can you see into the future? Because I'm working on that like this weekend as well, along with my partners. I'm so glad you asked that. That's some of the details that we have yet to bring forward in more detail to the negotiating table to talk about what the vision and most effective ways of community oversight are. We're lucky, again, to have so many effective CBA models across the country to compare and draw from. The advisors to the process to Prosper have also put forward some of those things for us to look at. And I agree that a frequent, although that may seem arduous, time commitment, but we've already invested so much time in this, and that's why I emphasized in my my comments that I think funding is really important to ensure that communities can be at the table and stay at the table in order to devote the time necessary to ensuring that you can hold not only the private development partner but also the public agency accountable to that. And I agree, I think monthly basis is a very smart way to approach it, especially because payroll comes on a monthly basis.
That's right.
So thank you.
And so my last question, and I really appreciate my colleagues' patience because they know that I'm a geek about this kind of stuff. My last question has to do with prevailing wage. If we made prevailing wage 100% across the board, that puts small mom-and-pop contractors at an extreme disadvantage. When you're trying to grow a one- and two-person shop and you have to have the same standards that the big-boy shops have, you will never, ever, ever be able to effectively compete. Is there an opportunity for us to think about how we allow those small minority women-owned businesses to grow into a prevailing wage? I want to be really clear. I absolutely support prevailing wage, but I also know that historically over the years, it's done a real disadvantage to trying to help grow small minority and women-owned businesses, because if they can't compete, they can't get the contract and they can't grow.
Thank you for your question. I'll start with two points. The first one being that I believe the determination for whether or not the project will prevail is determined by BOLI, the Bureau of
Labor and Industries. So is it the project or is it the contractors that are hired? I'm just kind of confused about how that process works.
Kimberly, could you explain that, please?
Right. So Vivian is correct. Bureau of Labor and Industries makes the determination at the beginning of projects that have public investments. The public agency is responsible for informing the Bureau of Labor and Industries that we believe it either should prevail or should not prevail. BOLI then says, yes, you're correct, or we don't agree with you. I think that the issue has been an important one from Healthy Communities Coalition, and there's been some conversation about potentially having some portion of the project be voluntarily prevail, but not the whole of it. But this is part of the active negotiations, and so we haven't finalize that portion.
I'll also offer that one of the panelists for the Healthy Communities Coalition can give you some more detail around that point, and I would love to follow up with yourself and your office around that. Thank you.
As would I. Thank you. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you all. Were there any other questions for this panel? Thank you all very much. Next, we're going to hear from our public partners panel. We have Adina Long from Portland Parks and Recreation, Chris Werner from the Portland Bureau of Transportation, and Andrea Durbin from the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. Good afternoon. Thanks for being here.
Good afternoon. Mayor, City Commissioners, I'm Andrea Durbin, the Director of the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. We appreciate being a part of this afternoon's presentation and are very excited about this project. With the Broadway Corridor, we have a once-in-a-generation opportunity to show the nation and the world that it is possible to build and design a large residential and employment district that emits no carbon. Currently, all buildings in Portland generate 40% of the area's carbon emissions, nearly as much as the transportation sector. Of those buildings, half of the emissions come from large commercial and multifamily residential buildings, such as those that will be built in the Broadway corridor. With potentially 4 million square feet of new development coming online, Portland has a unique opportunity to ensure that this project meets our climate goals to be net zero carbon for all new construction by 2030 and to be 100% renewable. With the Broadway corridor, we can design and build a neighborhood that is more resilient, saves residents and businesses money on their monthly utility bills, and will be healthier for residents and the community at large. It means we need to design, build, and operate Broadway corridor so that the buildings are highly efficient and the energy supply to heat and power the development is 100% renewable. And the development fosters walking, biking, and offers low-carbon ways to get around, including electric vehicles and other mobility options, and that it reduces the carbon embodied in the building materials, such as using low-carbon cement. The Broadway Corridor project also offers an opportunity to build a major section and connection for the Green Loop, one of the big ideas that emerged in the Central City Plan 2035. A collaborative effort amongst many bureaus, including Parks, PBOT, BES, and BPS, the Green Loop is being designed and built as big public and private projects move forward in the city. The Green Loop is a 6-mile linear park following an inner circle around the Willamette River, in that it will provide residents, workers, visitors with access to more places to experience the central city in an entirely new way and enliven this part of the city, including previously inaccessible U.S. Postal Service site as it's transformed into a green and sustainable neighborhood. It will run through the Broadway corridor from the park blocks to the south, across the Broadway Bridge to the north, through the Lloyd District and across the new Earl Blumenauer Bridge, then head south and connect with the Tillicum Crossing, bringing pedestrians, cyclists, runners, rollers, strollers full circle through South Waterfront to PSU and the Cultural District. The Green Loop will add to the city's active transportation network, offering a free, safe, and comfortable option and be an all-ages and all-abilities route. It will also increase access to a wide variety of parks and open spaces, and it increase the tree canopy, which mitigates against the heat island effect in an area of the city that's dominated by buildings and streets. And it will link neighborhoods and connect important destinations, retail and employment centers, civic and cultural institutions, parks and attractions to each other and the rest of Portland. The Green Loop will serve as the green heart of the Broadway corridor development, and we appreciate the partnership with Prosper Parks, PBOT, and BES to help realize the Green Loop in this project. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Great. Mayor Wheeler, Commissioners, Chris Warner, Director of the Portland Bureau of Transportation. Thank you for our opportunity to contribute to this update. This really is
There we go. Sorry. Oh.
Ooh.
Hello. Again, Chris Warner, Director of the Portland Bureau of Transportation. Mayor, Commissioners, thank you. This really is, as everyone said, a transformational project for the city and really reshape the way that we get in and around the central city. And we're very happy to partner on this project because we really do believe it can make a major contribution, as I said, to make it easier to walk, bike, and to take transit around the central city. In turn, such a shift on how people get around will really help us with our sustainability goals as well as our safety goals, which are paramount to the Bureau. As this project develops, we are really playing four major roles. First, we are a partner in the planning, design, and construction of the Green Loop elements that Andrea was talking about. Second, we have the regulatory oversight over the proposed transportation improvements and the strategies that will be put in place to make sure that the impact on the overall transportation system and the environment will be minimized. Our charge is in this respect is to make sure that the development partners follow through on their commitments to improve the transportation system and to put into place the appropriate strategies to encourage people to stay out of their cars and to minimize the number of single occupancy vehicle trips. We will be the future maintenance provider and will take care of the basic street elements as they become part of the public right of way. And finally, in creation of this really innovative neighborhood design encourage walking and biking, it really does take a high level of investment. So given its importance, we really anticipate using our system development charges to move this project forward because it really will make the big difference in terms of the goals we're trying to hit in the central city. And at this current stage, PBOT staff are working on the very multiple fronts on this project to move forward, including the development review. We're working to make sure that the master plan meets the requirements and to get to the necessary approvals. And we're also, the PBOT planners are updating the Pearl District street design standards to reflect the new district streets and provide clear guidance to development phases over time to make sure that the design of the streets and the development frontages work for this new and innovative district. The Bureau is also reviewing the Transportation Demand Management Program with suggestions to Continuum and Prosper to ensure that there is the adequate programmatic support for district employees and residents to travel to and from the district without needing private automobiles. So as we said, we're looking forward to working with Prosper, Continuum, Portland Housing Bureau, and all of our partners, both public and private, to make sure that the next steps of this project are moving forward. So I'm happy to answer any questions and turn over to Adina.
Thank you. Director Long, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. For the benefit of others in attendance, I'm Adina Long, Portland Parks and Recreation Director. I'm happy to join you today to provide testimony on the Broadway Corridor project. The Broadway Corridor represents a unique opportunity within the Central City to create an exciting mixed-use development on an approximate 34-acre site with future buildings surrounding a critical, vibrant, urban open space. By 2035, we estimate that the Central City will be gaining about 38,000 new households and about 51,000 new jobs. The new extended park sequence has the potential to provide necessary community open space in the already park-lean Central City. Portland Parks is committed to designing and constructing the Pacific Northwest College of Art, or PNCA, North Park block, located directly south of the PNCA block within the next 3 to 4 years. Within that PNCA block design process, Parks will be leading the development of conceptual plans for the full Parks sequence, including the two additional Broadway Corridor park blocks and the Green Loop design, working in partnership with Prosper Portland, PBOT, BES, Continuum, and others. This affords the opportunity to design the park blocks holistically. These park blocks are a natural extension of the existing North Park blocks, furthering the vision to create a green ribbon throughout the city. Parks has been working with, and will continue to work with, collaboratively with Prosper Portland, the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, PBOT, BES, the Housing Bureau, and others to identify shared objectives and funding strategies for the development and design of the Central Park space and Green Loop. We fully support and applaud Prosper Portland in their efforts to shepherd this exciting proposed Broadway Corridor development. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel? I want to thank you all and your bureaus for your continued leadership and your continued engagement. And I know you all have independently very full plates. But as I'm sure you heard and understand and appreciated from the first panel, that this is a very, very big vision and it's an important one. And it's going to guide not only how we do future development in the city, it's going to guide how we work internally as a city and through our own bureaus. So I want to thank you all for the commitment, leadership
you,
that you've already shown. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next panel will be our steering committee, representatives of our steering committee. We have Sam Rodriguez, James Paulson, Victoria Lara, and Tyrone Poole. Come on up. Thank you for being here. And unless you so choose, you don't have to go in any particular order.
Ladies first.
Very good.
Oh, wow. Okay. Thank you. Buenas tardes, Mayor and Commissioners.
Buenas tardes.
Buenas tardes. It is a pleasure to be here and testify for this amazing project. I'm a business owner. I'm an immigrant, and I have a firm, a communication and engagement firm, and we have the honor to produce and develop the strategic communication and engagement plan for this project. It was an amazing opportunity. We started at the end of 2016, and it was a great experience for us.
Ma'am, could you put your name in to the record?
Victoria Lara. Thank you. The commitment was to authentically engage residents and motivate them to actively participate and express their opinions, to develop a sense of ownership of the project to maximize community benefits agreement. with the intention of creating spaces particular for traditionally disengaged residents, communities that has historical mistrust of the government, like communities of color, residents that at or below, below federal poverty levels, that usually don't benefit from these kind of development projects. You know, community engagement is really one of the best tools to build social equity in any project. We love doing this, we love what we do, and we know how important and vital is this. This project with the leadership of Prosper Portland was created with the lens of racial equity, using traditional and non-traditional strategies, multicultural and multilingual cultural responsive engagement tactics. We facilitate and guide and eliminate the barriers to have thousands of conversations with focus groups, roundtable discussions, community events, pop-up tents. We listen, but not just listen, we deeply listen what people needed to say, because for us, we say it was not, as the mayor said, it was not about the project, it was not about the building or the development, it was always centered and focused on the people, particularly the people that usually doesn't benefit from these projects. We listen to construction workers, business owners, displaced residents, homeless, people with disabilities, kids. We develop and we are able to listen to everybody that was invited and motivated to participate in this process. We provide them with the space to feel safe, because it's not just inviting people, as you know, real and authentic community engagement, invite, but also go where the people are and provide a safe space for people to really participate and engage and provide their opinions and know that somebody's listened to them. We provide the spaces, the tools, the resources, the opportunities to fully participate in this process. All the input received was used and incorporated into the decision-making process. It's no doubt the opinions tailored and guide the Broadway Corridor project, and they build a more sustainable and equitable process now. Since we already listened to this and participate and motivate these people, now we hold accountable the city and Prosper Portland to continue to provide what these participants require. They share their dreams, they share their challenge, they share what they really want and their vision, and we are now, we have all this information to hold them accountable and to support them with the work they're doing. But it was an unprecedented work for these projects, the engagement in the way the equity was offer for these people to participate. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Good afternoon.
Mayor, commissioners, thank you for giving me the
Is it on?
Okay, it's not on. There we go.
Thanks.
6 inches. There we go. Mayor and commissioners, thank you for the opportunity to talk to you today. My name is Sam Rodriguez. I'm the senior managing director of Mill Creek Residential. We're a national multifamily developer, market rate developer. We've developed in the last 7 years about 2,000 homes in Portland and have currently about 1,000 homes in the pipeline, all of those 1,000 including inclusionary housing, so totally participating in the new program. It's great. It's a fantastic opportunity to do this. I'm also a design review commissioner and the president of Oregon Smart Growth, which, as his name says, is all about smart growth and about doing things that are that work for everybody. And I don't want to say that because even though we're developers, we're not the evil developers, we're community builders. My role in this commission was to, in part, to be the only developer in the commission and help bring to the conversation the business side of development So it was sometimes a difficult conversation, but I got to give Prosper Portland kudos for putting together a team of people that respectfully were able to create communication between very different groups and races, both racial, I mean, there were women representing different parts of our community, and created a great opportunity to have very meaningful discussions that I think resulted in very meaningful, a very meaningful framework, structural framework for this development to happen. It's going to be difficult to achieve everything, but I think there's a very strong creative business community in Portland that will allow to create opportunities for a good bit of this to happen. My biggest fear coming into this was always, are we asking too much of it, and will it ever get built? Because if it doesn't get built, then none of it happens. And so I think, you know, it was good to see that the whole group was able to ground itself when necessary to create the vision that we're here today. And I think everybody wants the same results. We just have to figure out how to make it happen. So that's key.
Thank you, Sam.
Thank you for having me here today.
Thanks, Tyrone.
Portland Development Commission was... My name is Tyrone Poole. I am a business owner in Portland. I am a member of the CRA committee, and I'm also a member of the steering committee. And CRA, for those who don't know, is a group that was put together to be the equity lens for Prosper Portland. Portland Development Commission was known for trying to help minorities gain access to employment, but they called that equity. They also worked really hard to help people that did, those minorities that did have access to employment, to get meaningful employment that would be able to cover their expenses and even sometimes get up into management positions. But they called that wealth creation, and that's not actually the truth. So I had a really good time working with Prosper Portland under Kimberly's leadership and to be able to create better products to redefine what those definitions were. And on this Broadway Corridor project, my testimony will show that we came up with some really good ideas and had a lot of work done to help create real equity and real wealth creation opportunities. Before the testimony, I would make sure that I don't want anyone in this room to think that my testimony is a derogatory statement to all the work that they did to create meaningful employment. It's just not why I participated in the project. As a business owner, I learned how to read a P&L, and I know that wealth is created from profits. That's just a fact. It's a fundamental fact of business. Employees are also on a P&L, but they're under...
I don't know what P&L is.
Profit and loss statement.
Thank you.
Yes, for businesses. And employees are also on a profit and loss statement, but they're under expenses. And as a business owner, my primary objective for my shareholders, for myself, is to grow profits and minimize expenses. And so employees, at the end of the day, at the end of a 10-year employment history, even if this job does a really good, does a really good job creating those employment opportunities, they usually end up where they were 10 years when they started. Yeah. So I want to make sure that wealth is defined as being able to keep going after employment. That's basically how we are defining wealth creation. And we use that as the primary lens on this Broadway Corridor project, not just a lens. And standard is to use a financial lens as the primary lens. For example, if inside of the train station there is a space for a coffee shop, the person with the best P&L or the best financial strength, like a Starbucks, would get that opportunity. With this new equity lens being the prevailing lens, opportunities would go to small business owners, minorities, like a Deadstock Coffee or something local, because even though they may not financially be able to beat out the alternative, just like you were speaking about earlier, how we make sure that minorities get access, that is the lens that we chose to work with on this project. And to furthermore, we made sure that Prosper Portland was prepared for when those opportunities came. We worked with Kay at Prosper Portland, helped recreate his, and he was very excited and willing. He did an amazing job to recreate the loan product. So that way, when small businesses do get the opportunity, they have the financial means. And we made sure that the marketing, like you brought up earlier, to make sure that they knew these opportunities existed, was marketed correctly in the right communities. We did an absorbent amount of work on this. And for the first time, I think that all the communities were aligned with what the objective was. We saw success the same, which meant that all the communities lived and worked in this new part of city, Portland, together, not where it was, minorities lived on the outskirts, which is sometimes the case. Thank you.
Thank you, Tyrone. Good afternoon. And you can just slide that over. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Excuse me. Hi, my name is James Paulson. And I'd like to thank you for the opportunity of coming up here and making a presentation in front of you. As you've heard a number of people talk about this project is really a lot different than anything that we've really seen in the past. But one of the perspectives I really want to give to you is from as a small business owner and participating in this project over the last year and a half to 2 years, you have to really understand as a small business owner, attending and doing these activities is almost like paying to participate because you're taking away from that time at your business. And the fact that Prosper Portland was able to put together a process that was able to keep me and everyone else engaged, I think is a testament to the quality of work and the message in which is coming to you. There's a lot of energy and a lot of personal resource in those words in the presentation. And I really want you to understand that commitment of the people who did participate. And then I also want to really point out that as we talk about wealth creation and that sort of thing, we really need to also look at the programs that we have in place to develop future entrepreneurs. How can we get people out of, I have a decent paycheck, to I'm out creating wealth within my community that spans the spectrum of communities and different peoples? And, you know, the city is challenged with a number of different things, but one of the things that we can't lose sight of is that we need to make investments in programs that are going to develop these next entrepreneurs. And I mean, I could go through and name off a number of programs, but I don't think that would be a good use of my time. I think the good use of my time is to drive home the point that if we don't make the investment in developing young entrepreneurs and new businesses, we are not going to find ourselves successful in the long run on building a community that's based on the principles that have been described here today. Thank you.
Thanks, James. Appreciate it. Mayor. Any questions? Commissioner Udaly.
I'm curious what your business is. I'm sorry, I don't know.
Yeah, it's all right. I am the owner of JMPDX Property Management.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Well, I really appreciate your comments. I think it's timely. It's frustrating that we put up a lot of barriers for people who we're trying to reach because they are disadvantaged, but people that have wealth and power don't have those same barriers, so I appreciate those comments. It's a second job.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you. I appreciate you mentioning the cost to small businesses to sit on these task force and to show up and actually provide your community expertise. And it is an issue that we at the city are really struggling with because we should value your time as much as we value our own time. And so that is certainly something that we need to work on. As part of the committee, you may have heard me earlier ask about prevailing wage versus small businesses. Has that had an impact on your business or other businesses that you are, any of you are in relationship to? And do you want to speak on prevailing wage versus growing into prevailing wage?
My business specifically isn't impacted by prevailing wage. I do have a lot of experience in past career in my, when I worked in HR.
Your past life.
Past life, yes, with prevailing wage. I think that prevailing wage is somewhat of a double-edged sword. And as you pointed out, that prevailing wage to a large employer is more of an administrative challenge.
That's right.
With a smaller employer, it becomes more of a business imperative.
Yes.
And so as we're looking at these projects and opportunities, as you pushed Ms. Brannon on, you know, show me the money.
Right, right. Yeah.
Show me the money that's going into these small emerging businesses. I think prevailing wage is a bigger concern, but you know, it has to be balanced against having the living wages ongoing in the businesses that are going to be created there. I think that we have a better understanding in the on the construction side, and I really appreciate the sentiments around having oversight and that sort of thing, but we're talking about a long-term project.
Yes.
And as we look at the businesses that are going to be locating there, we need to look more at businesses that are aligned with the tenets that we've pushed forward as far as the goals go, and less so on saying prevailing wage or no prevailing wage.
Because I think a bigger issue is bonding. And I didn't hear anybody talk about bonding, especially for small businesses, when you have to have a $1 million bond in order to even apply. Mm-hmm. That knocks a lot of small businesses right out of the competition at the front end. And so I hope that this steering committee will think about all the ways our systems impact people's ability to actually be able to apply and obtain those resources to build their business. So thank you all very much. Greatly appreciative.
Thank you.
Thank
great
you.
Great panel. Great conversation. And thank you again, all of you, for your leadership and your time commitment. The last panel that I'd like to bring forward is the Healthy Communities Coalition. We heard a little bit from Vivian up front. There are three other individuals. Marcus Mundy from the Coalition of Communities of Color. Kelly, is it Kupchak?
You're so good. You didn't say cupcake.
Well, cupcake sounds nice. That sounds lovely. From Oregon Tradeswomen, of course, and Yasmin Ibarra from SEIU Local 49. Thank you all for being here. Appreciate it. Yeah, is the green light on, Marcus?
No,
there you go. Yeah, that's good. Thank you.
Well, it's good to see you all again. Thank you for welcoming us and letting us present in front of you today. My name is Marcus Mundy. I'm the Executive Director of the Coalition of Communities of Color. We are an alliance of culturally specific community-based organizations with representation from African, African American, Asian, Latino, Middle Eastern, North African, Native American, Pacific Islander, and Slavic communities. The CCC supports a collective racial justice effort to improve outcomes for communities of color through policy analysis and advocacy, culturally appropriate data and research, environmental justice, and leadership development in communities of color. Why we're here today is that we have supported racial justice member organizations of the Healthy Communities Coalition from the very beginning, both with our members and others, for over 3 years of intentional relationship building. We invested this time to ensure as a coalition we could craft a holistic vision for the Broadway corridor alongside our labor partners, community-based organizations, and environmental groups that ensured that our interests wouldn't be pitted against one another in yet another zero-sum game exercise. That we had no interest in that. Our explicit interest is to improve outcomes for communities of color in this city and in Oregon. And we strongly support a legally binding community benefits agreement which is clear, enforceable, and changes the course of history for development in Portland, which instead of communities of color being transacted upon, we are at the table as full partners and or conveners, shaping inclusive outcomes for all who will live, work, and play in the Broadway corridor. We bluntly reject any insinuation that the proven tool of community benefit agreements won't work in this market. As aforementioned, many other communities, both large and small, with public entities and private developments, have used CBAs to their benefit, including Nashville, Oakland, Los Angeles, Pittsburgh, others, but those are just to name a few. The Broadway Corridor CBA would be the first such comprehensive agreement in our city, covering not just construction equity, but many other concerns of our communities. we think it's about time. We're also looking forward to the following components of the vertical construction of the project, specifically affordable housing. Affordability continues to be a concern for Portland Housing Bureau's, for our members and for communities of color in Portland. The PHB, the Portland Housing Bureau's own state of housing report states there are no neighborhoods in Portland affordable to single moms or to black families. I hope they include single dads too, because I was one of those. This is unacceptable, and the housing provided in these units should be affordable from 0 to 60 MFI. Environmental sustainability within the building. This building should, I would love to say must, but it certainly should include green infrastructure, energy efficient, and environmentally friendly development. And the last part, which the last panel addressed a little bit, tenanting. Business equity is key for communities of color, and we're advocating for the prioritization of MWESB businesses in this space, in addition to businesses that follow family and worker-friendly policies. The city already has some good examples of this. Your own minority contracting group does good work in this area, but we would like to see more of it. Given the history of intentional displacement of indigenous, black, Chinese, and Japanese residents from this area, and given the city's recent acknowledgement of that intentional displacement, we at the CCC are also advocating for a racial preference to be considered for the housing units as a concrete step toward remediating these historic injustices. We affirm our ability to problem solve when we build intentional relationships with one another. We affirm our values as a community that's committed to racial justice, which is demonstrated through clear definitions of good quality jobs and maximizing the opportunities to build affordable housing and for businesses. And lastly, we look forward to supporting all aspects of this CBA, recognizing that a just outcome means that there are no sacrifice communities here and that all will have a future in Portland's newest, exciting neighborhood.
Thank you, Marcus. We appreciate it.
Good afternoon. Thank you, esteemed commissioners and Mayor Wheeler. For the record, my name is Kelly Kupchak. I'm the executive director of Oregon Tradeswomen. For the last 30-plus years, we've worked really hard to ensure that women and people of color have access and opportunity and equity in the skilled trades. We see those as a clear pathway from poverty to prosperity. And I want to take a quick moment to thank the city bureaus, as well as Kimberly and her team at Prosper, as well as the developer, for coming to the table, and the folks around the community, because this is not an easy process, right? We, if folks have been in this community for much longer than I know, that it has been, come back. Thanks, Chloe. Yeah. I was wondering. All right. It's not been an easy process, but it's a critical process for ensuring that folks that have been historically marginalized and have been historically excluded from a shared wealth model have access to that. And so Oregon Tradeswomen fully supports the community benefits agreement model, and we'd like to see and ensure that four components are included. One is that there is a project labor agreement to ensure a voice for workers and worker equity, as well as for equity and access and opportunity for minority and women-owned firms. We'd like to ensure that there is prevailing wage, and I'm sorry that Commissioner Hardesty stepped out, because I wanted to address her very important concern about that impact on small, emerging, minority and women-owned firms around prevailing wage. It's a false narrative. There's a lot of demonstrated research around the opportunity for minority contractors and women contractors to grow when they have access to supports and access to those bid packages and the ability to really grow their firms. And so prevailing wage is also to ensure that all of our workers have a fair wage, so all of our workers are lifted up, not just a few. The third piece is that there's sufficient investment into the project in terms of a set-aside for reinvesting into our community. Folks have talked about this being a transformational project from a built environment perspective, from an environmental perspective. It's also really critical that that reinvestment helps our most vulnerable job seekers have access to the jobs, both on the front end for construction and at the end-use jobs, as Marcus talked about, in terms of those 51,000 jobs that are projected at the end-use. use. And that can also, that reinvestment through that set-aside can also support minority and women-owned firms and emerging firms in getting the technical assistance they need, including bonding and support on bidding, so that they're not left out. Right, so they're not left out. Right now, it's my understanding that that's capped at far less than even 1%, which is a model that has been used in other communities at 1.3 million. So over 20 years, that's $65,000 a year. That's not even training 10 folks. So I just want to underscore what that investment could look like or perhaps should look like. And then lastly, ensuring that there's strong oversight and enforcement of what the components of the community benefits agreement are, and that community is at the table. Those of us representing community, those of us that work with community to ensure that the project is living its goals and living the components of the CBA, so we're accountable to the community. And last year, just want to close by saying we are excited to be part of this conversation, and we see this as a model for true reinvestment and true outcomes of a shared wealth model. Thank you.
Thanks, Kelly, and thanks for all the great work you do at Oregon Tradeswomen. Really appreciate it. Good afternoon.
Mayor, commissioners, my name is Yasmin. I work for SEIU Local 49. We represent around 15,000 workers in Oregon and Southwest Washington who work in janitorial, security, and healthcare, as well as other services. All too often, commercial real estate projects in Portland have been a tale of two cities. Impressive office buildings for well-paid professionals, and poverty jobs for janitors, security officers, and other blue-collar workers. This inequity built into our city's economy disproportionately harms people of color, women, and immigrants. Two leaders of our union recently shared their perspectives with Prosper, Portland, and Continuum Partners. Adela Mesa, who's over there, who has been a janitor for 20 years, as well as Linda Sporer, who's been a security officer, and both of them working in these industries for over 20 years. Both of them are here today, and I'm submitting their testimonies that they presented for your consideration. Adela and Linda described their work in the past for non-union companies where they experienced poverty wages, insufficient health insurance, or none at all, disrespect on the job, including sexual harassment, and the fear of being fired if they spoke up about such problems. They also testified about the major improvements they experienced when they organized a union, winning better wages, health insurance, and having a power to speak on the job without fear of retaliation. So for us, the Broadway Corridor represents a unique opportunity to create a new district where all jobs are good jobs. The CBA negotiations with Continuum and Prosper Portland have conceptually agreed to quality job standards for janitors and securities and investing into the community-driven oversight and enforcement. And those are two important steps forward. But things are missing. First, they have not committed to making such standards enforceable for all building owners and tenants over the life of the project. And secondly, they have not agreed to setting enforceable standards for workers doing other types of jobs. SEIU Local 49 is united with our Healthy Communities Coalition partners to make the most of this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity in Broadway Corridor. We are prepared to celebrate the co-creation of a transformative approach in equitable economic development if we can reach that agreement in the coming days. But we are also prepared to hold private developers and public officials accountable if the project ends up creating more poverty jobs based on unenforceable promises. So we just want to reiterate our request that our support to you, that our central demands are equitable access to good jobs and contracting opportunities for everyone, including women, people of color, and also including fair wages and benefits and a voice on the job, sufficient resources to create career pathways, and meaningful oversight and enforcement tools. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you. Thank you all for your presentation. Thank you so much for the testimony from SEIU workers. I appreciate receiving that always. So you've raised a dilemma for me. Okay. How do I make private developers do anything? I have no authority over private developers who own their own land and are going to build whatever it is they're going to build. What has been the conversation with the committee about how does that happen, right?
Yeah.
Because, okay, I'm with you. Let's say we could do it. We can't. Legally, we cannot do it. So what's the next best thing?
Yeah, if I can bring up Vivian. She's on
She's got an answer.
And Vivian, the mic just slides over there. There you go. If you could reintroduce yourself for the record, just so the closed captioners
can. Let me reintroduce myself. My name is Vivian Satterfield of the Healthy Communities Coalition. Thank you to our wonderful panelists for representing so many of our interests here. Commissioner Hardesty, I appreciate the question. That's explicitly why community benefit agreements, so I want to be clear, CBAs isn't just alphabet soup. It is a legally binding agreement that the community negotiates in a three-party agreement with the private developer and with the public agency in order to formally codify in legal language and contracts the language to hold them accountable. And that's why there were so many CBA experts being brought into the process to inform precisely that concern of how you can hold private developers accountable. And that's why we're at the negotiating table.
So basically, it is an agreement that's reached between all parties at the front end, right? And then it gives us the tools to go back and say, us the policymakers, the tools to go back and say, well, you agreed to this when we started, and now we're here, and now we need corrective action. Is that an accurate?
Correct. It's legally binding, and the corrective action is also laid out in those terms, including keeping potentially, potentially the door open for other future corrective actions that could be available. I know in the state of Oregon, we have many preemptions, so.
Yes, yeah. We do. Yeah, gotta love it, huh? Thank you very much. That's very helpful, because we need to know what our options are, like, in full, so I appreciate the ongoing conversation. I know we'll be meeting to talk more about this, so thank you all so much.
I look forward to that. Thank you.
Mayor.
Commissioner Udaly.
Thank you for that, Vivian. I just want to one more point of clarification. It's because there's publicly owned land and perhaps other kind of subsidies and perks that will be given or contributed to this project that we're able to do the CBA. We couldn't compel a private developer on private property to do this, right? Well, unless they were receiving benefits.
Yeah, so I think, and I'd love also the opportunity to come to each of these offices and talk a little bit more about the tool of CBAs. The reason, it's not necessarily only because there's public dollars available and in the project. I mean, the exchange that's made in the community benefits agreement, and what I inferred in my comments, is that the community agrees as signatories to not protest the project. So there actually is an exchange in order to receive those community benefits. And so a developer could choose, even without the public agency's involvement, to do that, which results in work stoppages and whatnot. But there's many different models for how that happens, yeah. And we're working with our technical advisors as to how best to make that hook.
As far as us being able to compel anything, it's because of our stake in the project.
Yeah. At this moment, yes.
Yeah. Mr. Mundy, we could talk about this offline because I know we're going a little over time, but I just want to put a couple questions on the record. You stated a desire to see some kind of racial preference policy in the housing. How do we do that without running afoul of fair housing laws? And if that's a really long answer, we should talk about it later.
It's a long answer. I'd like to say, yes, we can talk about it later, but not to be non-transparent, just because it's a full conversation and specific remediation. And I know they've talked about it a little bit on the committee as well. So
I mean, I certainly understand the intent and desire, and I'm not saying I'm not supportive, but most concerned with, not violating.
And that would be a more focused remediation for the people who were specifically displaced,
right.
Communities that were specifically displaced.
And then, Kelly, I'm really interested in the prevailing wage conversation as well. I think I share some of Commissioner Hardesty's concerns, and I really want to make sure I understand it. And again, it's probably a conversation we could have
Absolutely.
Some other
Thank
time.
You.
But
Thank
I did have one question. I mean, as a former small business owner, I know that there are cost advantages linked to the scale of operation. It's just simply more expensive for small businesses to perform certain services or functions than a large business. So, I mean, that's what I'm trying to to get to?
Certainly, and that's a good question, and it's an important consideration. And again, I appreciate that Commissioner Hardesty raised that early, and I'm sorry you were out of the room when I tried to address that in a small piece. But certainly, on the front end for construction, it's an opportunity to level the playing field for all contractors who are bidding. There are other mechanisms that can be put into place to assure and ensure that small firms, emerging firms, disadvantaged firms, minority firms, and women-owned firms aren't waiting for a month for payroll to come in. There are opportunities to ensure that those set-asides are providing the technical assistance they need to even bid and understand back-of-the-house issues or have access to bonding. And that's not my area of expertise, but I do want to say there's a lot of research that demonstrates prevailing wage is really critical, and it's not a burden, in fact, if it's done right and it's done with those supports to small firms. And it really is truly important for us to lift up those wages for all folks. I mean, when I think about the conversation about affordable housing and the folks that we serve and the fastest way for them to get secure housing and to be, you know, fully living in this community and thriving is through a good job with a good wage and benefits. We are not going to do that if we continue to low road.
Yeah. All right.
So we're happy to follow up and provide that research and have other additional conversations if that's beneficial.
We just have to make sure that we do it right.
Yes, and thank you so much for those questions, Commissioner Udaly, because for me, I mean, James Posey and I have worked on this issue for almost 25 years straight in this chamber, right? And it has played out over and over again at a disadvantage to very small firms. And so I don't want to reinforce the status quo. And the status quo right now means that there are a lot of small minority and women-owned firms who don't get the opportunity to grow because of that barrier, right? Okay. But again, I didn't hear anybody talk about how do we bond, how do we, the city, or Prosper Portland or somebody create a bonding mechanism so that is a barrier that's removed. Right now, today, if you're a pre-apprenticeship, you're paying into a union that you don't get a benefit at all unless one day maybe you make it to journeyman status. And so when we have people in training, we've got to understand that we have people in training and we're growing businesses. And if we want those businesses to grow, they can't be competing at the exact same level as the big companies. And so we just have to figure out how to do it and do it right. The city has not figured out how to do it right yet. And I don't want us to miss the opportunity with this project.
So let's let that be the final word. Obviously, there is a ton of information here, a ton of great ideas put on the table. This is an update report. All of this is to be continued. And I want to underscore how much we appreciate everybody's participation and comments today. And I heard a lot of intersections in terms of the values that we all share. Commissioner Fritz?
I just had one comment. Thank you, everybody who's here. And thank you, Mayor, for setting up a really true discussion of all different sides and many different perspectives, thanks to Prosper and the Housing Bureau. What's, I think, good is that we all want the same outcomes and that we're all looking forward to the opportunities that are presented here. So thank you, Mayor, for setting this up like this.
Thank you, Commissioner. And with that, I'll entertain a motion.
I move the... What is it?
Move to accept the report. Accept the report.
Sorry. Well, we just followed over each other.
Long day. Yes.
But nobody seconded it.
I second it.
Okay, so Commissioner Udaly, we're going to actually give you the motion. We're going to give Commissioner Hardesty the second. And Commissioner Fritz and I will just go along gladly. Carla, please call the roll.
Fritz?
Thanks again. Aye.
Hardesty?
Aye.
Udaly?
Thanks, everybody. It's an exciting possibilities and important conversations. I vote aye.
Wheeler?
This is a fantastic, big vision, and I love the fact that it's starting with the values. It's starting with the values of inclusion. It's starting with the values of shared economic prosperity. It's starting with the values of creating a world-class example of sustainability. It's starting with a value of creating a space that everybody sees themselves in. And I'm really excited about this going forward and continuing with all the great work that everybody's, who testified and everybody in this room has been engaged in. To the future, I vote aye. The report's accepted. And now, colleagues, I'm going to turn the gavel over to the Council President.
Could we take a five-minute break, please, Madam President?
Absolutely. We'll take